Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. That live music can only mean one thing, our 500th show. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd get slapped with a diagnosis of keratoconus if I saw that you missed today's show. The 500th. It's Nonprofit Radio's 10th anniversary and 500th show. It's also our last live stream. After today, we're going to be podcast only. To celebrate all these milestones, we've got the whole gang together. Claire Meyerhoff, our creative producer, is co-hosting. We've got the live music from Scott Stein, composer of our theme music. Each of our esteemed contributors will be with us. Jean Takagi, Maria Semple, and Amy Sample Ward. And we have a bunch of surprises.
Our 500th show is sponsored by Cura Coffee, connecting coffee lovers with coffee farmers and their families, curacoffee.com. We are also sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, wegnercpas.com, by Cougar Mountain Software. Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Visit tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And we are also sponsored by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. That's turn-2.co.
That professional voice can only be one. It's Claire Meyerhoff. Claire Meyerhoff, welcome.
Tony Martinetti, this is the first time for us on Zoom, but I feel like you're right here because you're right there on my laptop.
It feels close. Yeah, every anniversary show has been in the studio. This one, of course, can't be, but we pull it together because it's the 10th anniversary. And I'm grateful to you because you've been creative producer of this show since like episode one. Before episode zero, you were a creative producer.
Yeah, about a little over 10 years ago, you and I had a dinner and you said, you know what I want to do? I want to do a radio show. And I said, do you have any idea how hard it is to do a radio show? And you were like, no, I don't care. I'm doing a radio show. Will you help me? And I said, sure. And here we are, 10 years later.
We are indeed. Our creative producer, Claire Meyerhoff. Love it. Love it. And you have that professional radio training too. So that it all.
Yes, I have a background in radio.
Indeed. Indeed. So how have you been? How are you managing? What's going on at the PG agency?
Well, you know, I help nonprofits of all shapes and sizes with their planned giving. And so that's been fun. And I've been honing some of my skills at home, like learning GarageBand and some different things that I didn't have time to learn before. So that's been quite interesting. I have a few new little endeavors and I have some nice clients. It's been interesting because I started out 2020 with this list of five clients I was working with. And then all of a sudden in March, like it all just changed and some went away. And one that was like a little project turned into now like my main client because they were in a different situation. So it's really shown us sort of the fluidity of things in the nonprofit world.
Well, that's very gratifying. They love your work so much that they brought you in to do more.
Yes. Well, they had more need, and then other people had less need and less money. So I like more money and more need. That's always good when you're an independent person like we are.
Money follows expertise. That's you.
And you.
Hey, Scott Stein, how you been?
I'm good. How are you, Tony?
Oh, fabulously. Scott Stein, of course, the composer of Cheap Red Wine, which he'll be performing shortly. What's been going on musically for you since late March?
Well, it's certainly been a little slower than usual, as you can imagine. There's not a whole lot in the way of live music, but finding ways to stay busy. I teach. And so my teaching has just gone online. I have a couple of choirs that I conduct, and we are finding new and creative ways to stay active and stay connected and keep making music online. We all miss each other very much, but this is a good way to stay connected. And actually doing a couple of gigs here and there, mostly via Zoom.
Yeah.
Occasionally I've been able to do an outdoor socially distanced concert. I'm doing one a week from Sunday in Brooklyn where I live. And so that's always good. It's just you have to stay busy and stay active, and that keeps you motivated and keeps you moving.
The online concerts, that sounds like an interesting idea.
Yeah, it works. You know, it's I think it's probably going to be with us for a while. And but it's, you know, it's a nice way to play. It is a little weird. You finish a song and you're used to hearing some sort of applause.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you just hear nothing. And so, I mean, you know, you see people on mute clapping. It's very strange. And also when you banter, that's the thing. Like, you know, we try to keep things light. And if you make a comment that you think is funny and you don't get a response, it's like, I don't know if that was funny or not. I have no idea. I'll just assume it was. it's strange, but it's, you know, it keeps us making music. And that's, you know, that's the main thing right now.
I attended a couple of online stand-up comedy shows. And the first one, the producer kept this audience muted because he was afraid that people would be chiming in too much. But that was very disruptive to the comics to not know, you know, I've done some stand-up, not to the caliber that these folks have, but you're playing to the audience. When the laughter starts to subside, you know, you start talking. You don't want a dead zone of no laughter, you know, and so you got to time it, but they couldn't do that because they didn't have the feedback. So, but the producer learned, and then in all the other shows, you know, the audience has been unmuted and they've been respectful and no hecklers, but it's important for that feedback, you know, a comic, just like you're saying, for a musician to get feedback.
And the best part about doing this via Zoom, though, is you do get a heckler. You can mute that person.
Yes, you can.
You can't do that in a club. So, so there is that advantage.
The equivalent would be like cutting off their head or having security bounce their ass out, right?
Yeah.
In a live setting.
It requires a lot less aggression to just hit mute.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that.
Claire, do you do any performances of any type? Like, are you with that professional voice of yours? You have a podcast.
I do have a new podcast, and I'll be happy to chit-chat a little bit about it, and that's appropriate because the name of my podcast is Charitable Chit-Chat with Kathy and Claire.
love alliterations as much as I do.
Well, it all works out because it's also Kathy with a C and Claire with a C, so we really like all our C's. So I do it with my friend and colleague, Kathy Sheffield from Fort Worth, Texas, and she's a very experienced plan-giving person. And she and I have talked about doing it for a while, and then when COVID hit, we said, well, we have no excuse. So I learned how to do GarageBand and record stuff, and I do all the editing and production, and Kathy and I do a podcast, and it's plan-giving focused. And each episode, we have one guest, and we've had some awesome guests on from the California Community Foundation and Northwell Health, Nature Conservancy, and a wonderful volunteer from the Girl Scouts of America who's helped bring their plan giving program in less than 10 years from 400 plan giving donors to 4,000 9 years. So very successful program. So we have a lot of great shows coming up, and it's charitablechitchat.com with Kathy and Claire.
Is that what prompted the GarageBand learning that you talked about?
Yes, it definitely prompted the GarageBand learning, and I had plenty of time to learn that. And it was, you know, I have a production background, but I had never worked with GarageBand, so some of it was intuitive, and others I was looking all over YouTube for tutorials and found some really helpful things. And hey, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's, you know, it's nice to have a new project during COVID because there's nothing new, right? It's like the same house, same different day.
I did something similar. I learned Audacity.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, Audacity is a great program.
Comparable GarageBand.
Yes.
I knew so little about Audacity when I started. I was ready to write a big check. I figured this is such a popular program app. It must be like $200 or $250. And that's how little I knew about it. It's free.
Yes.
Audacity is absolutely, but I didn't know. That's how little I knew.
And right.
Now I've gotten familiar with it. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot to do when you learn like podcasting on your own. There isn't sort of one solution out there that's kind of like, oh, the podcasting solution. No, you have to record your interview on something like Zoom and get that into an MP3. Then you dump that into GarageBand or Audacity. You cut that up. You add your music. That's another situation. And then you have to upload it to Buzzsprout after I've produced it. And then from Buzzsprout, you have to subscribe to the different services like Apple Podcasts and Spotify and iHeartRadio and do that. And then you do it over and over. And it's a lot. It really is a lot to learn. There is a learning curve with do-it-yourself podcasting.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So you said you bring in the music. Let's bring in the music.
Hey.
Okay.
Scott, remind us, Cheap Red Wine. Now, this has been our theme song for many years at Nonprofit Radio. Remind us the genesis of Cheap Red Wine, please, and then play it for us.
Sure. The song, I recorded it on a record back in 2009, a record called Jukebox, and I'd wrote it probably about a year before that. I like to describe this as coming from my angry young man phase. You wouldn't know it maybe from listening to it, but I was living on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and the social circles that I ran in when I wasn't playing, which was to say my roommate's friends, there was a lot of people who worked in law and finance, and I think they didn't know quite what to make of me. They didn't kind of understand that you could play music for a living, and so... And it's also a big single scene up there, and I was single at the time, and I got a little cynical because I sort of felt like I was just in the wrong profession to be dating. So this song kind of grew out of that. I will add that I have been happily married for 7 years now with a wonderful son, so it all worked out. But anyway, so that's where the song kind of had its origins.
All right, please, Scott Stein, Cheap Red Wine.
Sooner or later I'll figure out just what you mean. You're seeking romantic advice from a bill, but I'm looking for answers up on a TV screen. If we can't agree on nothing, we can't tell our ups from our downs. We're disappointed in each other. Now tell me, baby, ain't this love that we found? To find me charming, but I can't figure out how. And you said you thought I was handsome, but it doesn't matter now. So keep falling for my punchlines as long as your time will allow. Cause all I've got are empty promises, a bottle of cheap red wine, and thou. Some girls just live for diamonds, and they won't talk to the kind of clothing that I wear. With the good stuff, and you're too easily distracted to care. Well, I ain't got too many options, so I'm gonna do the best that I can. Baby, you. Oh my goodness, I've forgotten the lyric. But baby, you'll have some competition one day when I'm a wealthier man. I got it now. You know you used to find me charming, but I can't figure out how. And you said you thought I was him, but it doesn't matter now. So keep falling for my punchlines as long as your time will allow. Cause all I've got are empty promises, a bottle of cheap red wine, and thou. Victory signs, so we're perfect for each other as long as we've nobody else in mind. Nobody is waiting in line. Oh, we're just like cheap red wine. But I can't figure out how. You said you thought I was handsome. Never mind, it don't matter now. So keep falling for my punchlines as long as your time will allow. Cause all I've got are empty promises about a cheap red wine and thou. Cheap red wine and thou.
Love that song, Scott. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
There's nobody waiting in line. We're just like cheap red wine. Thank you. I love it.
I remembered those lyrics. So.
Don't worry about that.
That happens.
So, Claire, I got this. I got some new venture, Planned Giving Accelerator.
Yes, it sounds very, very exciting.
You're in the Planned Giving space. So I'm,
yes, I am.
In the arena of shameless self-promotion.
Hey.
Planned Giving Accelerator. It's a membership community. I launched it 2 weeks ago. Nonprofits join for an annual membership,
mm-hmm.
and I will teach them everything I know about starting and then growing
yes.
planned giving programs.
That sounds great. So is it a month? Do people come on a webinar monthly, or what do people get for their yearly subscription? How does that look to the nonprofit person hoping to grow their planned giving program?
No, I hadn't thought through that. No, they
I was get, like, Tony.
They get, we're going to have...
you got a nice poster.
There's exclusive, yes, there will be exclusive webinars. We'll probably do two a month. There'll be exclusive podcasts, one or two of those a month. I'll be doing small group Ask Me Anything sessions on Zoom.
Very nice.
We can talk through individual potential donor challenges, mm-hmm. prospect challenges, mm-hmm. or talk through your marketing materials mm-hmm. in those small groups. There's a Facebook community.
Very nice.
All exclusive just to members. It all kicks off October 1st. The first group starts October 1st, and that's what we're promoting for. And it's at PlannedGivingAccelerator.com.
Well, there's a lot of need out there. A lot of nonprofits are not in the planned giving game or in the planned giving space. They think it's too scary. They need technical knowledge. They can't do it. They need too much staff, whatever. But frankly, any nonprofit can do something with planned giving and bring in those all-important planned gifts. Also, I think you'll be helping to educate people about like asking for non-cash assets and things as well, like how to, you know, do more a little bit more complex gift giving.
We will eventually. We're going to start off with getting bequests.
Yes.
But there's a whole groundwork, as you're suggesting. There's a whole groundwork that's got to go before you start promoting. You got to promote to the right people and then give them the right message, et cetera.
Yes. And you have to have a back end. That's the first thing that I help my clients with. It's like, well, what do they have? Do they even have information on their website? Like some people have nothing on their website. And in our most recent episode of our charitable chit chat podcast, we had this volunteer from the Girl Scouts, and she got started because she had updated her estate plans about 10 years ago. And she included the Girl Scouts. And then she happened to be in New York City not long after that, where the headquarters are. So she went to go meet with the development person just to drop off like a copy of her, whatever, her paperwork. And the development person wasn't there. So she met with the CEO and she sat down with the CEO and she said, well, you know, I was updating my estate plans and I went to go find some info. I couldn't find any information on your website about that. Why is that? And the CEO was like, I don't know why. And then from there, they created a whole good, great planned giving program. So, you know, the back end is, first off, you need to have some information on your website. You need a dedicated page with some bequest language, with your contact information, with your tax ID, just a couple of things. And if you have that web page, then you can start getting in the planned giving game.
That's the beginning. And that's the kind of stuff we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
Easy promotion.
You got to get in
and it. Identifying the right people to promote to and giving them the right message. And how to do that, and then how to follow up, how to talk to your board about planned giving.
Yes, all important.
That's all to get planned giving programs started in the audience that I'm always most interested in, small and mid-sized shops.
Me too. So, I love the small nonprofits, and there's anyone can get started in planned giving. So I think that your program is really great, because if you have you're a small nonprofit, you have donors and they're going to leave some charities in their will, but they're not going to leave your charity in their will if you've never promoted the idea and you've never communicated the idea.
Absolutely right. That absolutely. You need to be asking. So
need to be asking.
If you're ready to get planned giving started, PlannedGivingAccelerator.com.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the evolution of this. And I think it's much needed in the space. And I think you'll be successful and help a lot of people along the way. And that's what we're all about, helping nonprofits, especially the little ones.
And someone who's helping me to promote Planned Giving Accelerator is with us. He's Peter Panapento is part of a partner in Turn 2 Communications. Just renewed their sponsorship for a second year, which we are very grateful for. Very grateful for. Peter, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Tony. Great to be back here, Tony. We've been checking in very regularly over the years. Excited to be part of this milestone episode.
Oh, thank you. Yes. 500 shows, 10 years. And I'm grateful for your sponsorship, you and your partner, Scott, at Turn 2. What's on your plate these days?
We're doing a lot of media relations work these days. A lot of nonprofits and foundations that we work with are really looking to try to break through the clutter right now and get their stories told in the media, which is a really challenging thing right now during COVID-19. I mean, it's always challenging, but right now we have so many media outlets that are operating with furloughed staffs and with people kind of playing out of position, covering different beats. And nonprofits are really looking for extra support and trying to figure out who they need to connect with, how they can connect with them, and how they can connect what they're doing to the prevailing storylines of our time, which are COVID-19 and racial justice and equity. And so we've been spending a lot of our efforts there, in addition to working with you on the Plan Giving Accelerator and other things too.
Indeed. Yes. Challenging times, indeed, to get your voice heard. But it's doable. As I say in the sponsor messages, you know, if you have those relationships with journalists, if you have the right hook, you can be heard even in the coronavirus cacophony.
Absolutely, absolutely, and the relationships are really important. And what I think a lot of nonprofits and really all organizations still make the mistake in doing is thinking they can kind of spray and pray their way to success with media relations. By spray and pray, I mean kind of spraying out press releases to everybody and hoping and praying that somebody picks it up. What really works is when you have some relationships with journalists who really cover the topics you care about, and that they're actually thinking of you when they're looking for sources rather than the other way around.
Yes. And as a former reporter, I wholeheartedly agree, because I, back in the day as a news reporter for working in all news radio and working in television, you would get these like spray and pray kind of like press releases and stuff that had nothing to do with anything you normally cover. And, you know, you really need a more targeted approach and build a relationship. And I think nowadays it's easy to build a relationship with news people because they're all on Twitter and they're all on Facebook, and you can follow them and comment on their things and get to know them a little bit that way.
Absolutely. I think investing in a handful of those relationships and really trying to make sure you're nurturing the journalists who actually care about what and reach the people you need to reach. There's so much value in doing that. You're absolutely right.
And Peter, thank you again for your sponsorship of Nonprofit Radio.
I love the partnership. I'm really glad to support it, and I really believe strongly in what you do, Tony. So we're happy to be sponsors and to be part of this great community.
Thanks so much. Turn-2. You want to check them out. Turn-2.co. Thanks so much, Peter.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Claire.
I have a story I want to read from one of our listeners, Milda. Milda DeVoe. I'm the founder and executive director of Pen Parentis, a small literary nonprofit that helps writers stay on creative track after they start a family. I got into nonprofit work because I had the idea for this collective of supportive writers running programs to defy the stereotype, which was rampant in the early 2000s, that having kids would kill your creative career. I was already running a salon series that featured the diversity of work by writers who had kids, and I wanted to do more to prove to women and men that parenthood was just a life event and not an alternate career. I self-funded a fellowship for writers who were new parents, and a lawyer approached me and asked if I had considered turning my ideas into a nonprofit. I never had. She helped me pro bono. Now it is 10 years later, and Pen Parentis has helped countless writers finish their creative projects despite the challenges of raising kids, issues heightened to epic levels during the pandemic. We have won arts grants from New York City, as well as New York State Council for the Arts. As a writer with two kids, it makes me laugh that all the encouragement I give to other writers has just now finally come home to my own career. I finally finished writing my first novel. I want to thank you. This is the touching. Thank you so much. I want to thank you and your nonprofit radio. I feel that inspiring
I feel that listening to recordings of past live streams, I've been exposed to some of the top minds working in nonprofit today. It's like having an MBA in arts administration right at your fingertips, or at least the faculty of one. I've gained a lot by listening. So thank you. That's so touching. And Milda is with us. Milda, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thank you so much. It's really exciting to be here. Did you see me taking notes? I was already taking, I was like, oh, write that down.
Look at Milda. I love Milda's hair. That's beautiful.
Thank you. It loves you.
Very nice.
It's great. She's got beautiful bangs.
That's great. Yes.
Milda, did I pronounce your name right?
You did.
DeVoe.
Yeah. Okay. DeVoe.
So you've been listening to nonprofit radio for a while.
I have for forever.
Yeah.
Wow, I frequently, when I Google something that I don't know, I will find a link, you know, on Facebook or somewhere, I'll find a link to a show and I'll just go listen to the show. Like, that's okay. And so it works. Like, I don't know. Because I really, really, really learned this from the ground up, just sort of as I was doing it. And it's really, so we're going to put on a planned giving page pretty much this week.
Well, all right.
Yes. But it's really wonderful that you bring all these experts together. And when you interview them, so many of them are so generous with their time, with their contact information. Like, it's kind of spectacular. But I really kind of got into your show after you did the Foundation Center. I love the Foundation Center, and
I moderated
everything I can with them. Oh, they're Candid now. Candid.
Candid. That, well, they were the Foundation Center. You're not wrong to call them that. They were that back then.
So, but for the you did, I think, 4 sessions or some amount of sessions in their space, and you could go there and be a live audience, or you could watch it after. And so
yes, it was Nonprofit Radio Month at the Foundation Center, and the Foundation Center Month on Nonprofit Radio.
That was very cool. Yes, it was a very cool partnership.
The whole month. Thank you.
I also like all the partnerships that you have with all the different companies. Like, everybody's saying, just what the guy that was just on, Peter was saying, that you develop these relationships. Well, I feel like I learned something from you.
Outstanding. Milda, that's why I do the show. Thank you so much. Thank you. So for your generosity to Nonprofit Radio and for sharing your How I Got Into Nonprofits story, we have... We're going to send you a bag of Keurig coffee.
Oh, I love coffee. Bring me coffee.
It's a wonderful prize.
How nice of you.
You want to hear more about it? Keurig Coffee directly connects coffee lovers with farmers and families who harvest the finest organic coffee beans. With every cup of Keurig, you join our effort to expand sustainable dental care to remote communities around the world. We are a direct trade coffee company with direct impact brought directly to you, creating organic smiles beyond the cup. KeuraCoffee.com. And that is your prize.
Milda. I love it.
Yes, absolutely, Milda. Yes, thank you. Listen, thanks so much again for sharing your story and for being a loyal listener. Really, it's touching.
Thank you. It's so kind of you. I'm really grateful. And I love how your musician nodded when I talked about having kids at home and being a creative. Why I run a nonprofit, for that reaction.
I appreciate that so much. Yeah, you...
we're here for all creatives who are trying to create. So anybody who wants to, penparentis.org, we'd love to have you come and find out what we do. And thank you again so much for having me on the show. It was so nice.
Yeah, enjoy your coffee.
Penparentis.org. Thanks, Melinda.
Bye.
Thanks.
So long. Claire, you're a creative. You've been writing.
Yes, I am. I am. It's a blessing and a curse being a creative person, because the brain just never shuts off. So we're always making stuff. From a tender age, I was like sitting on my front lawn with a basket of crayons, and my mother would just throw like an old egg carton or something and some pipe cleaners. And before you know it, we had like costumes and putting on a show. So that's my childhood. So I have written for you a special 10th anniversary poem for Nonprofit Radio. So would you like me to read it to you?
Claire Meyerhoff, absolutely. It's so sweet. Thank you.
Okay, here we go. Let's celebrate a decade of the show by Tony Martinetti. Here's my poem. It's goofy, so you better get ready. Tony had an idea. Tony had a vision. Tony wanted a radio show, so he made a decision. He started his show. He booked his first guest. He worked on a format and then all the rest. Production with Sam, music with Scott, sponsors and quizzes. Man, that's a lot. Top Trends, and Tony's Take Two. Nonprofit Radio, we love you. 10 years later and 500 shows, your silver anniversary, your listenership grows. Your Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Top Trends, Sound Advice. Should I end this poem? Yes, that sounds nice. Happy anniversary, Tony.
Should I end this poem? That sounds nice. Thank you, Claire Meyerhoff. So sweet. Thank you very much.
Well, you got to end somewhere.
What a creative. Yeah, I love it. Thank you.
Well, you know, it's fun.
Thank you.
Something to do. It's COVID.
That's very sweet.
Got to keep doing things.
Silver anniversary. I thought of that. That's right. The silver anniversary.
Well, yeah. You know, I was thinking of ideas. I was like, what can I do for Tony's silver anniversary? And I was like, well, it is the silver anniversary. That's 10 years. It's silver. So maybe I should send him like an engraved set of silver candlesticks, or maybe I'll write him a poem.
Well, you could do the candlesticks too. There's no, they don't have to be mutually exclusive.
It's would not Amy one. Like those? I could do like
have to be one for, or the other.
Right. Yeah. I could do it for you. You're in Amy's 10th. When's your 10th anniversary? Did you have it?
You missed it. Yeah.
I missed it. Okay. I'll catch you on the next one.
Catch me on this one. It's not
on
too
the
late.
Gold one. I'll wait for your gold wedding.
No need to wait. No need to wait. No need to wait.
I'm gonna send you
by mere numbers. It's
I'm gonna that. Send just you send something the, really funny. That's
just
silver.
Send the silver gift.
I will
just send the expensive silver gift. Don't be constrained by the artificiality of numbers. It's okay. So no, you're not like
I'm
that.
Gonna go to Bloomingdale's and register you.
We got all our contributors are well, our esteemed contributors are here.
Nice.
Yes, absolutely. I see them. Indeed, I see Amy Sample Ward, our social media and technology contributor, and Jean Takagi, of course, our legal contributor and the brains behind the wildly popular nonprofit lawblog.com, and Maria Semple, the prospect finder at theprospectfinder.com. Welcome, Maria, Jean, and Amy. Welcome.
Hey, yay.
Great to be here.
Thank you very much. Amy, Amy, of course, besides being our contributor in technology and social media, CEO of N10. How is N10 doing? How are you doing, Amy?
I've recently been answering that question by saying that I am alive and awake in 2020. And all that means.
Okay. And being in Portland, Oregon as well.
Being in Portland, Oregon, being at the intersection of, I think, a lot of opportunity to positively change the world.
Well, you three have never been on a show all together. So I want to...
I know Jean and I have definitely been on at the same time before. But I don't think all three of us.
All three have never. So... Maria, meet Jean. Jean, meet Maria. Amy, meet Maria. Maria, meet Amy. Jean already knows Amy. Amy knows Jean. So meet each other. Welcome.
Yay!
You know, Tony, I had suggested a long time ago that you should fly us all into that New York studio at some point. And so
we would not have fit all together.
So since you never did that, here we are.
I'll fly you all to the beach now. It's much, much safer down here.
Yeah.
Well, until this coming storm, that is. But
that's just a little hurricane. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, not this weekend. Let's not get carried away,
it's
Marisa.
Like Cat 7 or something.
We're not doing it this weekend. No, it's not that bad. It's like a
2.
It's like a 1. It's so far it's a 1 or something.
Some of it's a 2.
We live, you know, that's part of our life, living at the beach hurricane season. So
it's coming straight to your house, Tony.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Evacuate now.
I got a metal roof. They're going to finish tomorrow.
That's good. Right? Metal roofs are great.
2 days before the hurricane, they're going to finish my metal roof.
Yes. What color is it?
It's a gray. It's a pale gray.
Very nice.
It's a neutral tone. Nothing outlandish like those clay, you know, those red clay color or anything. But Jean Takagi, how are you doing? San Francisco.
Hey, it's Jean.
Hey, I'm pretty well, all things considered, as Amy kind of referenced as well. A lot of folks hurting, so happy to be in good health with my family as well. And good to see all of you, and congratulations, Tony.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jean. And your practice has been very busy of late as nonprofits struggle a bit.
Yeah, a lot to deal with, obviously, the pandemic and a lot of racial equity movements, which is a very positive sign. So like Amy, I'm trying to see some of the silver linings and what changes and reimaginations may come out of this.
Indeed, quite a bit. I was talking to somebody earlier today that it's a good time for introspection, you know, and that may be on an organizational level too. And it may be that it's not all voluntary, but you know, some things have been foisted on us. So it seems like a good introspective time, like on an individual level and on a organizational level too. Seen a lot of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really helpful for organizational leaders to sort of get together and start to think sort of back to basics and say, why are we here? What are we doing? Who are we serving? What are we trying to do? And how are we really walking the walk and not just talking the talk?
Yeah, for sure. Right. Back to basics. Mission important for the board to focus on.
I love actually adding values to that as well. So just saying we further the mission, of course, that's important to be mission focused, but I think it's now equally important to be values focused.
What do we stand for? Yeah. Amy, you feeling that at N10?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think just to kind of extend what Gene was saying, I think we see a lot of organizations, at least historically, who hide behind a mission statement that doesn't name inequity. Of course, mission statements are often like aspirational, where you're going and like why you exist. And because those things aren't named, they use that to sidestep accountability to those issues, right? Like, because racism isn't named in their mission, they don't have to talk about racism. And maybe they get to say that they don't perpetuate any of it, right? And now this moment, kind of, I think what you're alluding to, Tony, with like it being foisted upon folks is people understanding or at least demanding that organizations don't get to sidestep that, that there's no way any of our social missions could be advanced if we aren't ever talking about racism, right? Like that's a root of why many of our issues even exist, that we have a mission to address. So there needs to be less fear of that, because the fear has really just got us to a very entrenched place of oppression. So can folks be willing to talk about that so that they can move forward and actually address their missions and serve their communities and really be part of the change that our communities need?
And we've had a good number of guests on lately talking about all those subjects. Mm-hmm. And there's more to say about it. There's more to the organizational journey to achieve racial equity and social justice. And I'm glad that we've been able to have a good number of guests, and I'm always looking for more on those kinds of subjects. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Maria Semple, what's going on in your practice, the Prospect Finder?
Well, you know, we still have nonprofits who are thinking about their major gift programs, obviously. And it has been a good time for some of them to kind of sit back and do some research on those donors that, maybe they haven't really focused on quite as much. And thinking about, you know, how is the approach to them going to be different? And so, you know, a lot of interesting things going on in the prospect research and major gift world.
Maria Semple, of course, she's about like 6 miles away from me or so. Maybe it's a little more. I'm not sure.
That's awesome. I didn't realize you two were so close.
Yeah, we're on the same island, different towns, but we're on the same island. Yeah.
Nice.
Same barrier island in North Carolina.
The same barrier island that's being targeted by this storm.
It's a part of life.
Can any of us pronounce the name of the storm?
It is.
What's the name of the storm? The name of the storm? How do you? Aloysius? No, it's
Isaiah. It's with an I.
Izio or something.
I don't know. I heard Al Roker. Al Roker said it really nicely today.
Oh.
I forgot. Like that. But that's
something
his job. Like he gets paid like $3 million.
It's a nice name.
What are the, who's seen some interesting, which could be good or bad, I guess, funny, like Zoom backgrounds? We all have lots of Zoom meetings, all of us. Who's got a good Zoom background that you saw? You thought, wow, like, I see like Scott Stein right now is Curious George.
Well, he's got, that's the best one. And yeah, I just put that up on LinkedIn. So
Curious George. That's not a background. This is
that's not a background. Well, it's
well, it is now.
Your, this is my toddler's.
It's part of your background.
It's part of your background.
Yeah, part of your background.
I think you should sell that to Zoom.
I thought that Curious George would just lighten the mood a little bit. So.
Absolutely does.
Well, I love Curious George.
It inspired me to ask, well, who else has seen something funny?
Are you talking about the virtual backgrounds, or are you talking about just people having things in their background?
Oh, I mean more like people in their backgrounds, like in their homes.
Their real backgrounds.
Oh. Something. Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I've really enjoyed watching, like I watch the Today Show. I'm an NBC watcher. And so I really studied the backgrounds, and I like to read the titles of the books on the shelves behind the people. And that's kind of interesting. Yeah. And then sometimes, like if they have their own book that they wrote, there's like 10 copies of it. So they have like four other copies, and there's like 10 copies of their book and then a couple more copies. So I like to look at the titles, like Colbert has it. And it's funny because Colbert's like in his basement, and it's like paneling, and it's just, you know, nothing fancy, and there's like an old desk and stuff, and so I like to look at the stuff on his shelf. Everybody likes, you know, history books and biographies.
You were mentioning people's books, like you can always tell, you know, the sign of an independent musician, because somewhere in their place they have boxes and boxes of unsold CDs.
right.
One of my bandmates referred to them as a very expensive coffee table.
Well, that's funny.
It's kind of what they're doing now.
You could do wall art with them, like do a whole wall.
Yeah, a tribute to me.
Yeah, no, and my one CD.
Do that. Tribute to narcissism.
Oh, come on, you got plenty of time, don't you, Scott?
Not these days.
No, not with the baby.
Nah.
And Curious George.
Anybody else? Anybody seen something funny? Mark Silverman just had. Mark Silverman is our web guy. He just had his. That was a fake background. His driving background, but nothing. Nobody's. I'm trying to think. I've seen good lighting. People have. I see people using light to good effect. I think people have realized that a turned on light makes a much nicer background.
You should have light on your face too. Like there's a lot of things for when you're lighting an interview. You know, you put light on the person's face, so you'll notice everyone has these little round rings, and sometimes you can see it reflected in their glasses.
Yeah, that's a problem with
light rings.
Right, the glasses. You got to be careful with the glasses, because even just your screen will reflect into the glasses.
Right, like right now, I turn that way. No
exactly.
Reflection.
Yes,
I turn that way. Wow.
Yeah. Now you're alien.
Now I got Google eyes.
Yeah. 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 All right. I don't know. What else? I feel like it's a cocktail party.
Didn't you say we were supposed to all answer some question? I didn't write down what the question was. I didn't think about the question, but I did make the mental note of Tony has some question we're supposed to answer.
Well, how you got into nonprofits?
Yes, I like that. Like, what was your first nonprofit job? Yeah. You know what I like to know? What did people do before they worked in the nonprofit? Because everyone has a different story. So, what was your last job before you entered the nonprofit space, and what was your first job in the nonprofit space?
I only have one job, in the nonprofit space, and that's when I was 15, and I worked in a coffee shop.
Oh, okay. And then, so your first job was your nonprofit job?
No, my first job was working in the coffee shop.
No, but I mean, your first nonprofit job was your current job?
No, but I just always worked in the nonprofit sector.
Right.
At 16 years old, she was CEO of Enten. It's incredible. Yeah.
I know.
Amazing.
That's cool.
Amazing. No, she worked it out, of course. How about that? That's a good idea. Gene, what did you do before you were a nonprofit attorney? You were at fancy firms.
No, I bounced a lot. I sold insurance. I worked in a beauty salon. I worked in retail. But the last job I had was I was operations manager for a duty-free retailer in San Francisco. So we were about a $50 million a year business in the early 90s. And I had to lay everybody off because
there's
only one vendor per city. So it's 150 people gone. I continued to work doing sort of national expansion for this huge global retailer, but it made me decide I wanted to work at something more meaningful. So I saw this little newspaper ad for what I believe was the first nonprofit graduate degree program in the country at the University of San Francisco. And so it's a two-year program in the evening. So I jumped ship and left my job. Worked for a tiny social service organization as an office manager. And,
very nice.
Went to school.
That's a great story. How about you, Maria? What did you do before you got into nonprofits?
I was working for a French investment bank in Manhattan. for 5 years out of college, and buying and selling and trading securities in French. And so very different from working in the nonprofit space. Didn't enjoy it very much. Was having dinner at my father-in-law's, who owned a fundraising consulting firm based in Nutley, New Jersey, and complaining about my job and hating it. And he said, well, I am looking for a campaign manager for a Salvation Army capital campaign.
Oh, wow.
In New Brunswick, New Jersey. And I raised my hand, and like you said, who said, Gene just said, jumping ship.
Right.
So I jumped ship and landed in the nonprofit space that way in consulting for him, and then branched out on my own when I started a family and decided I could do prospect research from home. So I've been doing this home-based thing and
yes, for
online
a long time.
Meetings since the early 90s.
That's cool. So, Tony, before you worked in nonprofits, you were in the service, weren't you?
That was long before. I was in the Air Force, left there as a captain, and then I went to law school and hated practicing law. And then I started my first business, which did mediocre, so I ended it and became a director of planned giving at Iona College.
Everyone has a great nonprofit story. I worked in broadcast journalism. I worked in All News Radio in Washington, D.C. I worked at CNN as a news writer, worked at XM Satellite Radio in D.C. And I covered a lot of nonprofits when I was a reporter because if it's cold and you need to do a story at a homeless shelter, you end up at a nonprofit, you interview the director, that kind of thing. And so I always liked the nonprofit space, and then later started doing like a little PR for nonprofits and things like that. And then eventually worked my way into the wonderful world of planned giving. Whee! And that's how I met Tony Martinetti, because I read an interview that you had done, and I was needed some content for another publication I was editing. And I said, can I take your article and turn it into a Q&A? And I emailed you, and you were like, sure. And we talked on the phone. And then if I had questions about planned giving stuff for this writing I was doing, I would call Tony, and he was so generous with his time, and we became phone friends. And then he wanted to do a radio show, and I'm a radio person. So 10 years ago, Tony started that.
I can't believe no one else spent years making espresso drinks and serving sandwiches to people. Like, well, what kind of nonprofit group of people are we if I'm the only person that did that?
Well, if you go that far back, I worked at Roy Rogers on Long Island.
Nice.
And, you know, I said, howdy, partner, may I help you? Thank you very much. Happy trails. I worked at Friendly's. I was an ice cream scooper at Friendly's. I was a waitress.
Nice. Nice.
My only espresso experiences were when I was waiting tables, and when in my restaurant, the waiters had to create the espressos, and I always cringed when people ordered them because I could never get it right.
Oh, wow.
When one table ordered an espresso, everybody else was late. Their entrees were cold. Salads didn't come. I'd cut out the soup to get to the entree and tell them it was the kitchen's fault. I couldn't get an espresso. Milk was never right. It was too foamy. It was too cold. It was too hot. There was too much steam. There wasn't enough steam. The coffee grounds were too compressed. They weren't compressed enough.
Wow. The curse of the espresso.
Espresso was a 20-minute.
Tony has nightmares about espresso. Hey, I bet that was that an Italian restaurant?
It was an Italian restaurant. Yes. Yeah,
had to have been.
Amy Sample Ward, you did many more espressos. I'm sure you had it better down, much better down than
I'm sure
I did.
She's great at it.
Yeah, I mean, looking back, it just seems so interesting. I mean, I grew up in a very small town, so I guess that came with trust. But like, you know, two 15-year-olds, we were alone in the shop, running the entire shop, closing it, doing all the bank deposits, you know, like, so I guess it helped instill from a very young age, like, responsibility.
Yes.
And all of that. But it also was like, we didn't have anyone else there telling us, you know, oh, you have to do whatever this customer says or whatever. It was just like, you know, two 15-year-old people. And we were like, no, you don't get that thing. That's not fair. You just demand, like, I saw you put your gum. This person did this regularly. Take their gum, put it on the side of their plate, eat their food, and then mix the gum into the rest of their salad. And then come up and say, there was gum in my salad. I'm not paying for this.
No.
And so we would just say, like, terrible. No, it's your gum. Like, we have no, you know, adult manager telling us the customer's always right. We were like,
right.
No.
No, like, that's your gum.
That's your gum. You're not getting your money back.
You eat your gum. You swallow that gum.
What do you do it, for God's sake?
Yes. I'm 15 and I'm in charge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good for you. That's good. You learned assertiveness. You learned responsibility.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a great story.
We learned far better than Tony how to make espresso drinks. That was my first exposure to people liked melted cheddar cheese on top of their cold apple pie. Like, you know, I learned a lot about humanity in that job.
I've heard of that one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I worked at Roy Rogers on Long Island, man. I learned a lot about humanity.
Man. Before we get into gross beef stories.
Old Country Road.
We got to move on. Maria, Amy, and Jean, thank you so much for what you contribute to each of you. I don't want you to go. Stay if you can stay, because Scott's going to perform another song. But I want to thank you. Thanks to each of you for all the years you've been contributors. Many, many years for each of you. Thank you so much for what you give to our listeners.
Thanks for having a platform that's open to lots of people, Tony.
Yes.
Absolutely. Congratulations on 500, 10 years.
500.
Yeah. It's
amazing.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Amazing.
Thank you very much.
Wishing you 10 more wonderful years.
Thank you. I will do it. I'll do it. Let's get Scott back. He's got Scott's going to do singing Spanish blues.
I am.
Scott Stein.
All right. Here we go. This song, like the other one, has a lot of words for me to remember. So here we go.
West Side morning, the sky was the finest New York gray. I was finishing up my third or fourth novel, like the one that got away. So I called up my doctor and I asked for his prescription. He said, son, I could think of just one thing for a man in your condition. So I boarded a big jet plane and landed somewhere in the east of Spain. Somewhere in the town I could hear a choir, and the voices like church bells rang. All the way to the square and the market, and these were the words they sang. They sang, my love, I'm standing at your gate. My love, it's you that I await. Cause I'm a man of importance and a man of stature, and I got no time to lose. And you don't know who'd greet me if you would leave me singing the Spanish blues. To my hotel room to try to rest my head, when a familiar voice reverberated and woke me from my bed. As I jumped up and ran to the window, I could not believe my ears. And when I looked, I couldn't believe my eyes neither, as she stood there in the clear. Now, I'd had no appetite for romance, still I told myself this was my chance. I ran down the stairs and out to the square, and there she did appear. The lady in the white dress turned and said, old chap, well, it's been years. And I said, my love, I'm standing at your gate. My love, it's you that I await. Cause I'm a man of importance and a man of stature, and I got no time to lose. And yet I know I would treat me if you would leave me singing the Spanish blues. Drank our share of wine, and then we drank some more till my hair was sore, but I didn't really mind. Cause I moved like a matador, precise as an engineer. And when the pass came charging, I stepped aside and pulled the red key clear. But then he came, the man of the hour, the real bullfighter with his one red flower. Well, he came for his lady and she gave him a look, a look I knew all too well. She went back to the man and I went back to the unfinished book in my hotel. Singing, my love, I'm standing at your gate. My love, it's you that I await. Cause I'm a man of importance and a man of stature, and I ain't got no time to lose. And you don't know how it feels.
Gottstein.
Wow, Gottstein. That was amazing.
Thanks.
Outstanding. Singing Spanish blues. Thank you.
That's super. Thank you. I love Scott Stein.
Thanks so much, Scott. Yes, scottsteinmusic.com, right? Do I have that right?
Yes, yeah, that's correct. And thanks again for having me, Tony, and congratulations on 500. And yeah, always a pleasure to do this with you here.
Thank you, Scott. I love having cheap red wine as part of our show. You're with me every intro, every outro, every show. Cheap red wine is with us. Thank love you. It. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Check them out. scottsteinmusic.com. So I said earlier, this is going to be our last live show. Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern has been my slot at Talking Alternative, now talkradio.nyc, since July of 2010. And this is going to be the last one where we're going to be live streamed. The show is just going to be the show is going to be a podcast only from here on. And what that has meant for these 10 years is working with Sam Leibowitz. Every show I've credited him. Sam Leibowitz is our line producer. And so it's been just a wonderful run with Sam. Hundreds of shows in the studio. Every anniversary show, which is every July, every 50 shows in the studio before this one. And I've just been grateful for the partnership with Sam and the network, the Talking Alternative Network, which is, again, talkradio.nyc. Sam, you're not able to join us by audio. It doesn't look, I see you, but you can't.
I have to keep switching.
Oh,
I can come on, but I have to switch back. Otherwise, the rest of the audio doesn't go out. But I don't think I'm being recorded right now.
Okay. All right. So Sam,
we
just
can hear you.
Sam just spoke. Yes, we hear him, but he thinks he's not being recorded.
And we see him.
So what he said was, Tony's been an outstanding host. He's been exemplary.
He's so handsome.
I'm blushing. I'm the,
George
I'm the color
Clooney
of my
has nothing on him.
And Tony does remain the honor, having the honor of being, besides my own show, the longest running show on the network. There was a period of time when we had several shows that had been with us for about 5 years, but out of all those shows, Tony is the only one who stayed consistent over all this time and has stayed with us this long. Thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate, you know, all of the time that you've spent with us. I appreciate all your support, and I love your mission, and I wish you the best of luck. And only the best things moving forward.
Thank you, Sam. I hope listeners were able to hear that. We're not. Sam said he's not sure if it was recorded, but I hope it was. Thank you, Sam. It's been just a lovely, wonderful, fun collaboration for these 10 years. Absolutely, absolutely so. But we're, of course, the show continues, as I said, on podcast every Friday. I'm going to keep to every Friday schedule. There'll be a brand new show every Friday. Available to our 13,000 listeners.
That's a lot of listeners.
Thank you,
Good job.
So we got to wrap it up, and I want to thank very much Scott Stein so much. ScottSteinMusic.com. Scott, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I want to give a shout out to our web guy. I'm always crediting him, and our Mark Silverman is our web guy. So Mark Silverman has been in the background for the show. Mark, say hello. So you're not you do speak.
I love the background. I'm the background guy. But, you know, I made a deal with Tony. Don't make me stand up live. But here I am. Tony, it's been great. I'm there every Friday for you. I put the podcast up onto the website. It's been a long and wonderful relationship. And 10 more years, make it 20. I'm happy to be there for you. And congratulations.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks. And thanks for all your help. It's been many, many years. You've been since the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing the back end for us. Thank you so much.
I wish I was on that submarine with you when you were the captain. That would have been even more fun.
Submarine. I was underground, but I was close. I was underground, not underwater. But you're close enough.
You were sub.
Claire, Claire Meyerhoff. Yeah, I was subterranean. Claire Meyerhoff, thank you so much. 10 years collaborating, creative producer, co-hosting every single anniversary show.
Thank you. It's really, really been a joy. And, you know, normally I come up to New York and we do this great New York show in Sam's studio, and Scott lugs in as, you know, sometimes I meet Scott at the door and I carry in some gear for him. And it's always such a treat. And then afterwards we go out and we get a bagel or something in the city. And, but this on Zoom was really, really nice. And I've enjoyed it greatly. So if you need a guest sometime, just hit me up and Zoom away, we will.
I'd love to.
It's been really fun.
Thanks very much, Claire. Our 10th anniversary, 500th show. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for each of our listeners. And I'm glad that Nonprofit Radio helps you in the important work that you are doing. The feedback I get is it's touching. I know we're helping nonprofits with their missions and their values. That's why we do the show.
Great job.
Next week, we'll return to our 20 NTC coverage with more of NTC's smart speakers. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on tonymartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, wegnercpas.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. tony.ma/cougarmountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. turn-2.co.
And we'd like to thank Sam Leibowitz. He's our line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this delightful, fantastic, marvelous live music is by the super talented Dots 9. And your creative producer is Claire Martin. That's me.
And with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
Yay. Great show.
Woo. Woo. Thank you so much.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening, The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.